Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me in studio right now is our Houghton County Prosecutor, Michael Mackinnon. Michael, welcome back to the program.
I'm glad to be here.
Now, we don't get a chance to chat very much while we're both doing our jobs there as you're active in the courtroom. So, you know, I kind of only see you in sort of one arena. So this is a good opportunity for me. We had one interview a number of years ago. But to sit down and just kind of, for the audience to get to know you a little bit, it's not just quotes out of a newspaper or from a story that I'm running, but, you know, get to know who our Houghton County prosecutor is.
That's fine.
Well, let's start with a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself, just apart from practicing law.
Okay. I'm born and raised in the Copper Country. Married to a Copper Country girl. Essentially, the only time I was away from here was when I was getting my education. I graduated from Lakeland in high school. I raised four children. All of them graduated from Dollar Bay High School. And just lived in a community. I was a private practitioner in Houghton County for 30 plus years. Essentially, everybody in Houghton County is a general practitioner because we don't have the economy to support specialists like you may get in the city. So I've had a wide range of experience. I've literally practiced in every level of courtroom in the state. I have appeared before the Michigan Supreme Court a couple of times, several appearances in the Court of Appeals, jury trials, and judge trials in probate court, district court, family court. I've been to tribal courts. I've tried cases. I tried a case in federal district court as well. And filed a few briefs in Federal Court of Appeals.
What was it like at the Supreme Court? What was that experience like?
Well, you go in there and you tell yourself they're people just like everybody else and you're not going to be nervous, and then when it comes time to speak, your mouth goes dry because you're nervous because this is the Supreme Court. It's, I guess, like players feel when they make Major League Baseball or National Football League first time out, whether you tell yourself to be calm or not, the adrenaline starts flowing and you get excited about it, and then things settle in and you basically discuss the issues that are there.
I can attest to that a little bit, having recently watched some videos of some testimony given before the Supreme Court, these attorneys who I'm sure are at the top of their profession, and that nervousness that I saw sink in, it's, you know, they seemed as like they were on the 10th grade debate team, and you know, and I know that to get to there, they had to be quite skilled at what they do, but it kind of went out the window a little bit.
It does.
Now, as the prosecutor, do you still practice other types of law other than criminal cases?
I do not do private practice. The prosecutor's office does have civil duties. Not a great deal of them, but several of the county officials have come to me for advice related to problems that they have, where I end up researching the statutes that apply to them. The probate work is somewhat civil. Some of it is what they refer to as quasi-criminal. There's some elements of it in child termination matters, for instance, that carry the rights associated with criminal defendants, and others, other elements of it is civil. It's a lesser degree of proof than what is required beyond a reasonable doubt for a criminal case. But no, I do not do private practice any longer.
Do you miss it?
I miss it somewhat, but the practice has changed so much over the years that civil practice when I started is not civil practice the way it is now. It is much more procedural now, much more controlled by decision making in Lansing, much less personal at the trial level in the outlying areas, the rural areas like we are.
How much work do you do outside of Houghton County? I know that you're a special or temporary prosecutor over in Keweenaw County. There's been some other cases similar to that.
Not very much. The schedule in Houghton County, of course, takes precedence. I have one case going on where I'm appointed now in Iron County. That is the only one that I have going on outside of Houghton County. But prosecutors are aware conflicts of interest arise with other districts where someone has to go in and take care of it. So you evaluate the requests essentially on a public service consideration. Am I an appropriate person to do this for another county? They have to have someone.
So the tour of duty, so to speak, in Keweenaw County, that's come to an end?
That came to an end. Joseph O'Leary in Berriga is doing it now, I believe, until January 1st, when the new prosecutor will take office, or January 2nd, first legal day of the next term.
Let's talk about some things here close to the home. We don't see many trials here. We do have, some of them. Almost most of them aren't something that really hits the news, though. When you're talking to potential jurists, what are some things that are you looking for when you're doing a jury selection?
What you're looking for, what I'm looking for is a fair jury to decide the case. As a prosecutor, it's a little bit different than being a defense attorney. When you're a defense attorney, it's you're trying to get your clients off, and you're trying to select the jury as best you can to get your clients off. When you're a prosecutor, you have duties to everybody. And what I'm trying to do is get a fair jury. We've charged because we believe they're guilty. But on any jury trial, the defendant has an absolute right to appeal at public expense if they can't afford an attorney. And so we not only look to have a guilty verdict, but we look to have what you would call a clean trial, one that's not subject to reversal on appeal. There have been cases reversed by the appellate courts, for instance, where it appeared that attorneys were selecting jurors or excusing jurors based on race or religion or something of that nature. That has been ruled to be an unfair jury selection process, and cases have had to be retried. I do not ask great detailed questions. I do not believe in invading the privacy of the jurors to try and come up with something that I can say is prejudicial because somehow I think in my mind that person may not be a good juror. So I ask questions intended to find out, is this person a fair-minded, open-minded person to evaluate this case?
When it comes to deciding which cases to prosecute and which not, are you the sort of the last call person that makes that decision?
Yes. On the felonies, I am. There's a few now that the assistant prosecutor is doing. She is basically totally familiar with probate court and district court now. She is learning circuit court. When that is complete, she will be fully qualified to carry out the duties of the office.
This is Ms. Brittany Bullitt.
That is. She is evaluating a few of the cases. If she has a question, we will consult on it directly. But most of the cases, it's me.
What are you looking at when trying to make that decision? You have an officer who is investigated a crime, made an arrest, and then brings the information over to you, and then it's up to you to make that determination.
We're looking at the degree of proofs. Do we have proofs that we think we can convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt? Sometimes I'll go back to the officers and ask them to develop another area. But most of the time the evaluation is not, is this person committed a crime, but what is the appropriate crime to charge this person with? And my decisions are not always with someone who has been arrested. Oftentimes the reports come in, here is what we found. There's a complaint been made. Does this fit with one of the crimes? And so it's an evaluation of the facts. Sometimes if it's an unusual or a crime that's not so common, we end up doing research as to what is required to prove all of the elements of the crime.
And I imagine this takes some time when you have a higher profile or very serious crime that the, you know, you've got public input flowing in, whether you want it or not, and who want action. They want the prosecuting office to take action. But you still have a process to go through.
We do. There have been times where the report is so crystal clear that it's a 10-15 minute process. When you have a drunk driver who's at a 2.5 blood alcohol, there isn't any question that it's an appropriate arrest and you're going forward. But some of the more complicated cases, I've had a couple of cases where the evaluation process probably took several days because the there's different reasons for that. Sometimes the investigation is drawn out over time, and the individual involved sometimes is giving information back that they say is consistent with their innocence, and you have to look at how these factors are interrelated.
Do you have to also then ultimately make the decision whether or not you have enough proof to bring about the conviction, even though that it you may be leaning towards that a person did commit the crime? It's what you can prove.
It's what you can prove. Essentially, there is an ethical standard. You may not like this person. You may think this person, or even know this person, is a criminal. But you're not permitted to bring the charge unless you, in good faith, believe there is sufficient evidence to get a bind over at preliminary examination and get the matter to a jury. Sometimes that's all you're looking for when it is a matter of public safety, but sometimes you're looking for more than that, higher level than just bind over and get it to a jury, because there are certain groups of cases that studies have shown that there's a very high percentage of being unsuccessful at trial. A classic example is a bar fight. We've seen some really nasty bar fights that we've tried, and it seems like juries tend to think if you're going out getting drunk and acting obnoxious in the bar, live with what happens, don't waste our time on it. And so we do evaluate what is the prospect of success based on our experience. What is the cost to the county of going through the trial? Because it's not just go to a trial, it's drag 40 or 50 citizens away from their lives to go through the jury selection process, and 12 or 13 or 14 of them are going to have two or three or four days of their lives taken to do their civic duty. And I view taking those individuals essentially as imposing a time tax on them. Sometimes it's literally a financial tax on them because they're working, they need the money, they're going from check to check, and they're not being reimbursed to the extent that they're losing. So there's a whole evaluation, just a lot of factors that you can't summarize all of them in one conversation.
Sure. And you just touched on, I guess, a number of the expenses that goes into play when it comes to carrying this all the way to fruition. A lot of times these defenders have, or defendants have a public defender, and that's, you know, gets paid by the county as well, and then the expense of housing them. And then if you do receive the jail sentence you're looking at, and more times than not, what I see was when I'm there president of sentencing is people being sentenced to the Houghton County Jail, which we know is already a major overcrowding problem. So people wonder, does the fact that the jail is overcrowded, does that ever come into play in our courtroom when it's, you know, determining what sort of sentences we are going for?
That comes into play somewhat more with the judges actually than with my office. My office tends to view it on a public safety point of view. The problem for my office, greater than that, is the sentencing guidelines that the state has imposed, which effectively mandate county jail in cases where we might think the person belongs going to state prison. But there are considerations to the jail, not only from overcrowding, there's not adequate juvenile facilities there, there's not adequate mental health facilities there. My office, while I've been prosecutor, the state has required us to sign a memorandum of understanding to direct mentally ill into the mental health system instead of the criminal justice system. 3 weeks after the date for that signing, the state reduced funding for mental health, and so the actual ability to treat the mentally ill has been reduced. There's not as much care going around, and we're dealing more with emotionally unstable than we were years ago.
Partially, I'm sure, related to that is you do see a number of people who come back through the system multiple times. Does that become frustrating as a prosecutor to have the same person sitting across at the other table multiple times?
I don't view it as frustrating. When you start seeing the same person over again and they're just being a thief, you look more and more to how seriously can we punish them, and do they go to prison this time around. Some of them are back over and over because they're substance abusers, and that's an entirely different problem. You get irritated with it, but you have to understand the process of what's going on with the individual. Some we know they're going to come back because they're unstable. We don't have the appropriate treatments for them here and can't force them into it. I would guess in the felonies, when you're up to felony level, most of them have a record. And when you get one that you realize 5-10 years down the line, we haven't had them back and they're living in a area, it appears that we may have solved the problem, then you feel good about it.
Oh, good. But what role do you play in the treatment courts that they're running at the district court?
The office is a member of the treatment court team. There are discussions regarding everyone, both before they go, before they're admitted to the court and after they're in it. Before they're in it, we take part in the decisions as to whether or not the individual is going to be admitted to treatment court. Most of the times, it's a relatively easy decision to put them in treatment court, but some of the times it is not. The other thing that comes up is when they're in treatment court, we will bring information sometimes. For instance, this individual appears to be doing well, but we've seen the person's name in a couple of reports, and they're hanging with substance abusers, and that's a warning sign. And so that's the faster you get the information to the actual treatment providers, the more likely it is that you can keep them successfully in the court.
Are you seeing, or would your opinion be that it's an effective program so far?
It is extremely effective with alcohol abusers. My understanding is it's one of the most effective in the state due to the treatment team we have here. It's with regard to the controlled substances, it is not as successful. We don't have the funding from the state for programs. And frankly, when you're talking about heroin, it's everywhere. Throughout the state, throughout the country, people are struggling to get programs, and it's unlikely that a small area like this is going to find a miracle cure for it that nobody else in the country has found.
I know you can't really stack these or rate them in any particular order, but when you're dealing with the harsher drug crimes like we're seeing with the heroin and cocaine that's in the area, do you red flag those a little bit more than some of the smaller drug crimes, and those now becoming, I guess, you know, not as serious as some of the major ones that require more attention?
The meth and heroin get the most attention. And I don't know if that's quite the right word. Meth is damaging individuals at an extremely rapid rate. It is far more dangerous, as far as I can tell, than virtually anything else out there. Heroin, once the individuals are hooked on it, I have not seen or heard of a successful program to get them off. There are some substitutes that are being tried, but they're new, both locally and statewide, and we don't know if they are going to be successful. Most of the people who have been arrested for selling heroin in this area, the prosecutions have been taken over by the federal government. Essentially, we work with the federal government. The sentencing guidelines are such that it may be hard for the public to believe, but a lot of the people that are selling heroin when we're up here, the guidelines say county jail. And that's not solving any problem. So if we can get them into the federal system, it not only saves us financially, but it's a better way to attack the problem.
So if the information is released that a particular drug case is being dropped, local charges being dismissed, and it's being handed over to the feds, that's a win-win.
That's, as far as I'm concerned, that's a win-win. The federal government asks us to dismiss the charges because there's a statute related to you can't transfer these people back and forth from state custody to federal custody and try them in both places, so you have to pick one. The federal government has stricter standards than what we have. The sentencing guidelines have actually reduced the ability of us to send people to prison for these crimes.
Lastly, do you have any other ambitions beyond the office of county prosecutor?
I do not.
Pretty comfortable doing this?
Yes.
Not gonna no Judge Mackinnon in the future?
Nope.
If people wanted to follow your campaign between now and the election day, how do they do that?
I have a website and a Facebook site. The website, I think, is www.michaelmackinnon.com. There might be an E in there. I'm not sure.
You're on Facebook as well.
I'm not great technologically. Fortunately, I have children who are good and did it for me.
Thank you so much for coming on the program.
It was my pleasure.
Copper Country Today. We'll be right back.